Hello, and welcome to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. We are your resident boyfriends. I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
So today we're going to be doing Season 7, Episode 5, Let Me Entertain You. So, Joel, what trivia do you have to start us off with for this episode?
I have a lot. Well, I don't really. I'm pretty sure you still hold the title for the most trivia in one episode. So this episode aired on the 24th of October 2010, and it was directed by Lonnie Price and written by Sarah Parriott and Yosan McGibbon. So when Renee and Gabrielle are talking about Renee's ex-husband, who cheats on her, Gabrielle makes the comment, being married to a pro athlete, it must be a nightmare. And this was poking fun at Eva Longoria herself, who was married to NBA point guard Tony Parker at the time, and they started divorce proceedings shortly after this episode aired.
Oh, God. So it was probably fun and funny when she was saying it until it aired.
Yeah. And so the episode takes its title from the song of the same name from Stephen Sondheim's Gypsy. Mm-hmm. Start All Over Again by Dana Glover featuring Dave Koz is sung by Emma Graham. Like, she actually sings it herself during the episode. And Emma Graham is played, as I said, by Dana Glover, and she is an American pop singer and songwriter known for performing film songs. She has no relation to Danny Glover. She is on the soundtrack for various shows and films, including Charmed and Shrek, where she sang It Is You I Have Loved.
Okay, I don't really know that, but
I don't remember that song. I'm sure if I heard it, because it's Shrek, hello. But I can't think of it right now.
She had a really nice voice.
She did have a really nice voice. But to this day, Desperate Housewives is her only acting credit. When Keith is sitting on the bed talking to Brie about trying to keep her interested in the relationship, you can see he has a tattoo across his heart that says Megan, which is for Megan Fox, who he recently married at the time.
Oh, cool. That was in one of my trivias as well about him.
Yes.
That he was married to her.
In this episode, it comes out that Gabby has been touched by an angel, let's say, and has had rhinoplasty to correct a deviated septum, in her words. Mm-hmm. And people are now making fun of her and referencing Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yes.
So who is Cyrano de Bergerac?
Yeah, who's she?
Who's she? He. But Cyrano de Bergerac is a play written in 1897 by Edmund Rostand, and the play is a fictionalization following the broad outlines of Cyrano de Bergerac's life. The entire play is written in verse, in rhyming couplets of 12 syllables per line, very close to the classical Alexandrian form. Mm-hmm. The play has been translated and performed many times, and it is responsible for introducing the word panache into the English language.
Ooh.
The character of Cyrano himself makes reference to my panache in the play.
But what was the nose thing about?
We're getting to it.
Oh, okay.
The story of Cyrano de Bergerac. So, Hercule Savien de Cyrano de Bergerac is a cadet who is a nobleman serving as a soldier in the French army, and he is brash, strong-willed, and a man of many talents. In addition to being a remarkable duelist, he is a gifted, joyful poet and is also a musical artist. However, he has he has an obnoxiously large nose, which causes him to doubt himself.
This sounds like a brilliant play.
This doubt prevents him from expressing his love for his distant cousin, the beautiful and intellectual Roxanne. Ew. As he believes that his ugliness would prevent him the dream of being loved by even an ugly woman.
Well, imagine what it would do to your kids.
This was in 1897. Marrying cousins was very common back then. But personally, I think the story of that sounds fantastic.
I want to watch that, but doesn't Lynette make fun of her in that way?
Yeah.
Why not Brie? That sounds like a Brie insult.
Because Lynette's very educated.
Yeah, true.
So
it just sounds like such a Brie insult.
It's something that Lynette would have studied.
Yeah.
And so this week, the United Arab Emirates' highest court rules in a domestic violence case that a man can beat his wife and children as long as he leaves no physical marks.
Oh, God.
Yes. 5 migrant Filipino workers are arrested in Saudi Arabia for filing a labor complaint against their employer.
What?
Yeah. Google and the Israel Antiquities Authority announced plans to publish the Dead Sea Scrolls online.
What are the Dead Sea Scrolls?
I couldn't tell you exactly what they are, but they are very important historical artifacts. China reveals plans to develop a super speed train with a speed of up to 500 kilometers per hour. French strikes against pension reform as the government of France taps emergency reserves to meet a fuel shortage with more than 4,000 petrol stations running out of fuel, which I find quite ironic considering that only last year the French were, again, rioting and striking against pension reform.
Yeah.
French police fire tear gas on rioting high school students in Paris, with cars set on fire whilst there are reports of looting in Lyon. Mm. United Kingdom boy band JLS and hip-hop MC Tiny Temper dominate the Music of Black Origin Awards in Liverpool.
JLS, wow, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, I know. astronomers announced the discovery of the galaxy UDFY-3813-5539, which is the most distant object observed from Earth.
Okay.
And several people are attacked in Uganda after a newspaper publishes the names and addresses of homosexuals.
Oh, God. That's awful.
So the number one USA song was Far East Movement featuring Cataracts and Dev, Like a G6.
Oh, it's getting worse.
Yeah, I know. Still not as bad as the Black Eyed Peas, but it's getting there.
So much worse than the Black Eyed Peas.
I Live to Rock. And the number one song in the UK was Just the Way You Are by Bruno Mars.
Oh, move on, right? UK.
This is coming from a Bruno Mars stan, guys.
I like
Bruno
Mars.
And even he is saying move on.
But come on, that song, that's enough.
So the number one movie in the box office for the US and the UK, because it was the same this week anyway, was Paranormal Activity 2.
Yeah, those films did really well for the first three.
Yeah, only because they had very minimal budget as well. So even from like a gross income or whatever it's called.
Hella profit.
Yeah.
I just mean, I know that a lot of people went to see those films. It was a cultural phenomenon at the time.
Because the marketing allowed people to believe that it was real found footage and not actors that were hired.
Yeah, they did the Blair Witch thing and people fell for it.
And people fell for it.
Just like I fell for it with The Fourth Kind when I was a kid.
So did I.
So, previously on Desperate Housewives, after many shenanigans, Brie finally asked out her contractor Keith on a date. Gabby became very invested in her biological daughter Grace. Lynette became overwhelmed and decided to hire a nanny. Susan has to pay $9,000 to get rid of promo posters of her in lingerie. And someone found out about the posters of Susan. They found one and they've kept it.
Yeah.
And it's obviously Paul.
I mean, who else is it really going to be?
It was obviously going to be Paul.
Yeah. Unless they're introducing a new villain all of a sudden. But that'd be like way out of left field for just a random episode 5.
So the episode opens with Mary A. talking about Emma Graham, a housewife who wants everyone to know that she is more than just a housewife. So she turns her dream of cabaret into reality by getting her husband to pay for her first show.
Absolute queen. She just walks right up to her husband and she's like, I'm doing a cabaret show. I'm going to need sound equipment, musicians and backing singers and you're paying for everything.
From what I got from this as well, it sounded like I can't believe that she's doing this moment, but also this woman stays home, looks after the kids, runs this house. You're making the money, you can pay for some stuff. So good for you, girl.
Yeah, good for you, girl. You've got a dream. You're allowed to meet it.
Yeah, marriages have to be equal.
Marriages do have to be equal. And I love this. Emma Graham is a character that we see for like all of 5 minutes, if that, but absolute queen to just sort of be like, do you know what? No, I want my daughter to know there's more to me and there can be more to her.
So everyone shows up to her first show a couple weeks later and Emma turns out to be a great singer and pianist.
With a killer saxophone.
And I love this cute little jazz bar with the candles and the colourful lights. Yeah. It's lovely. So the show is, however, interrupted by Gabby and Renee bursting through one of the doors having a fight. And like a full-on fight. Ending in Renee punching Gabby in the face.
Yeah.
She punched her friend in the face.
Even though we see this scene again towards the end, but like extended a little bit, and it's slightly different.
Yeah, there's
a missing bit. We have a missing bit at the beginning.
So let's talk about Gabby and Renee first, since that's how the opening goes and it flows.
Yeah.
The ladies are all talking about how Brie had it off with Keith 3 times when Renee walks up on the porch, and apparently Gabby doesn't seem to like her very much, thinking that she's too self-absorbed and selfish. Kind of like how Brie didn't get on with Catherine at first because they were very similar, I suppose.
Isn't she a bit of a narcissistic diva?
Yeah, we kind of want one of those. Yeah. So Renee says about how she got a lot of money out of her divorce and invites them all over for dinner, but no one can go except for Gabby.
And Renee is moving her way through the ladies.
So Gabby and Renee are drinking champagne together and talking about Renee's ex-husband cheating and all the good stuff that came out of it. They seem to be really bonding over how they understand each other and how they are both beautiful and super attractive. And Renee says about how she slept with Doug's lawyer and that's how she got $8 million out of it. She then asks Gabby for some dirt to make it even and accuses her of plastic surgery, which Gabby denies, insulted. But eventually she does admit to having a small nose job, which she cannot tell anyone.
You can't really trust either of them, really.
Absolutely not.
But Renee is right. Beautiful people get beautiful people. And it is tough to be beautiful. And B doesn't really understand that. So sometimes I do feel quite lonely.
That's rude. This Renee story as well about how she slept with Doug's lawyer in order to help win this case and get $8 million. I was like, that's such a telenovela story. That's holy crap.
Power play right there. If you've got it, if you can do it, girl. I would have done exactly the same. I'd screw your lawyer.
So Renee's ex-husband, Doug, comes over to Renee's with flowers to apologize and says that he made a huge mistake. Renee tells him that she's happy in suburbia and she's making a fresh start, and he continues trying to convince her to go back to the big city with a big fancy ring with sapphire on it and all, and it kind of cuts off before we actually know what Renee says about this.
It doesn't look too dissimilar to Princess Diana's ring.
It doesn't, actually.
Everyone, and I mean everyone, had a copy of that Princess Diana blue sapphire ring. My mom even had a copy of that. And girl doesn't even wear jewelry anymore, but she used to. Back in the 90s, she was full of jewelry. Even she had a copy of that ring. But this man is gross.
Yes.
Absolute pig. He's so cringe. Like, you can tell he's so confident that Renee's going to come back to him that he barely tries.
I think he's acting like the kid who he's annoyed because he can't have a certain toy. You know, that kind of vibe. I think that's why he wants her back, because he's lost this divorce.
Yes, true.
The next day, Renee goes over to Bree's for lunch with the other women and tells them that Doug apologized and she's getting back with him. Gabby is pretty confused considering that he cheated and is a dirtbag, but Renee says that they were together for 10 years. So the other ladies, being Lynette and Bree obviously, think that maybe he's worth another chance considering the years that they've already spent together, but Gabby speaks up and disagrees with this, leading to Renee telling her to keep her fake nose out of it in front of the other ladies.
Yeah.
This is interesting to the ladies considering how judgy Gabby has been to them in the past about certain things like wearing a stuffed bra and or like a stuffed swimsuit or whatever. So Gabby swears revenge on Renee.
You once called me a fraud for wearing a padded swimsuit.
Yeah, and I love how much joy
it brings Lynette, the ladies.
Lynette and Brie get out of this revelation.
Ooh, this changes everything. Just remember this moment, okay? Remember this moment in particular. Renee started this.
Yeah, because Gabby is just being honest.
Right? Lynette is supposed to be Renee's closest and longest friend, and she doesn't even have the balls to be honest to Renee here.
We're now back at the show where the episode started, and Gabby is still annoyed that Renee revealed her secret, thinking that being the naturally beautiful one was her unique selling point in the friendship group.
I'd be mad. I would be mad. Like, she promised she'd keep it a secret. She told Gabby she could trust her. Gabby specifically said not to tell the girls. Gabby even said in that scene, Carlos knows, but if the girls find out, I'll never hear the end of it. And she deliberately told those girls.
Yes, and I didn't note it, but it's probably worth mentioning that everyone is making fun of Gabby, because even Karen McCluskey and Lee seem to be bonding and having a royal laugh at Gabby in this scene.
The gays and the old ladies. Us gays and old ladies, we love a bitch.
I had to point that out because it's not just the ladies, it's spread.
It has spread. It's not even, it's not just Gabby's inner circle. It literally is everybody now.
And Gabby says that Lynette keeps making that joke about the play as well that Joel mentioned earlier.
Serrano de Bergerac.
Yeah, whoever she is.
And then she just turns to Emma Graham and she's like, yeah, so do you have any songs about a woman who's a backstabbing bitch?
Renee also walks in with Doug, feeling very happy to walk in with a massive piece of jewelry to show off.
Mm.
Gabby is at the bar, made fun of a couple of times, when a bartender asks one of the waitresses to take some drinks over to Doug's table. So Gabby takes this moment to get her revenge. She takes the drinks over herself and tells Doug that Renee slept with her lawyer. They both have an aside and argue over what they've both done, calling each other names. Renee calls Gabby pathetic, and Gabby implies that Renee is a prostitute.
Well, I mean, if the street corner fits.
And then Renee punches Gabby in the face with her massive ring, likely breaking Gabby's repaired nose.
With that fake-ass blood.
The next day, Doug calls Renee and asks if they can call it even, considering that they've both slept with someone now. But Renee seems hesitant, and it cuts away before we hear a decision again.
Mm.
And then, the next day, Gabby and Renee then both meet in the street, both of them originally going over to each other's houses to apologise for what they did. And by the way, Gabby seems to look totally fine.
She has like a bandage thing on her nose and she's got like a black eye.
But that's it.
Well, like, yeah, she only got punched in the nose.
With quite a chunky ring.
Well, yeah.
I thought it'd be broken.
But Gabby gives, this is probably going to sound dumb, and I know I'm going to sound like Regina George here, but Gabby gives Renee chocolates and Renee goes, I haven't touched a carb in 7 years. A chocolate's a carb?
Is butter a carb? Well, they do have carbohydrates, yeah.
Well, everything has carbohydrates, really, to a certain extent, right?
You know, I don't really, I don't research a lot of things that vapid people say about carbs. I don't know.
Because, you know, potatoes, bread, you know, things like that, they're carbs.
Yes.
They're carbs. And we all know they're carbs. But when it comes to things like chocolate, I was sitting there like, is chocolate a carb?
She's probably lying anyway. She's definitely at least had a chip butty once or twice.
I don't really think a chip butty is a thing in anywhere else in the world, guys.
Well, the American version of a chip butty.
A burrito.
We know from Wild Child that chip butties aren't really a thing in America.
No, that's true. But chip butty, like, honestly, chip butty. Guys, if you haven't had a chip butty, I know it's carbo loading and people are like, oh my God, chip butties. But honest to God, just throw some chips in a slice of bread. And you'll thank me later.
Yeah. Renee then says that Doug called her back to ask her to get back together, and she said no, saying that Gabby's truthfulness opened her eyes. She thanks Gabby for being such a good friend, tells her that she's keeping the ring that Doug got her, and they walk off together.
You're keeping the ring, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Way better friend than Lynette.
I think that was quite a happy ending for them.
That was a happy ending, and I'm really happy about it, because I do think that they could be really good friends.
Yeah, because they're really similar. They're doing what happened with Brie and Catherine.
Yeah, they love had that. Like a rocky start, and then, oh, it's a shame I'm going to have to ask you to cut it down.
Yeah.
Curtains, perhaps. Iconic. Like, that feels like a lifetime ago.
I miss Catherine.
It feels like a lifetime ago that we had Catherine come in.
Let's move on to Brie. Brie and Keith are home after going to a French restaurant, and Brie is apologising for it, implying that Keith had a bad time at the restaurant because it was quite fancy and he's not really that kind of guy.
Yeah, and she had to explain to him how to use the cutlery. But also, he did rock up to this fancy French restaurant in like a checkered shirt.
Yes.
And some jeans, while Brie was wearing that like kind of posh, glittery, sparkly dress thing. And I think that that's really shitty. Brie can sit there and say, I forgot that place was so formal. She didn't forget that place was formal. She was terrified that if she let Keith know how formal that place was, he would not want to go. And so they wouldn't go. So she deliberately forgo telling him so that he doesn't realise. But then it just embarrasses him. It was really shitty, in my opinion.
Yeah. It was probably like in Shrek 2 when he eats in the palace for the first time.
Great soup, Mrs. Q. Mm.
Yeah. He then kisses her on the cheek and says goodnight, which worries her further, but he says that he just wants to treat her like a lady, so she tells him to knock it off and they make out properly.
Yeah.
But isn't that powerful?
She should be thanking our lucky stars that she got the cheek kiss. I wouldn't have given her that with the way that she'd treated me.
She tells the women all about her night the next morning, and they're all invested about how she had sex with Keith 3 times, and apparently it was great.
And we all do that. She goes right to her friends after the sex.
3 times.
3 times.
In one
when
night.
When you have sex with a new guy that you're seeing, you run straight to your friends and you're like, I just had sex.
So Brie and Keith are back from another date talking about a stage show they just saw, with Keith saying that he wasn't paying too much attention to the actual messages and themes of the show because he was trying to find the wires.
So cute.
Which genuinely seems to upset Brie a little bit. Maybe she's realizing how different they are. There's just like that hint of upset that he's not maybe taking it as seriously as she is.
Well, yeah.
She then offers dessert. As she goes to get it, Keith has undressed completely, claiming to have mistaken about what dessert she was offering.
I mean,
they proceed to have sex.
I mean, hello Keith, he is hot. It's him.
Are we playing that?
We are playing that sting.
It's him. Oh, he's so sexy. Yes, sir.
I mean, it's such a cliche joke in TV shows now.
What, when someone's just naked in the hallway, in the doorway?
Misinterpreting actual dessert for sex.
He didn't misinterpret anything.
But in this moment, I'm not mad about it.
He knew what he was doing.
Like,
they then have sex again and again, to the point where he goes into the shower and she just says that she hopes he's there to stab her.
Please tell me you're here to stab me. Like, one of the greatest moments of Desperate Housewives history is that shower scene with that reference to Psycho. I was crying.
I reckon that if we watched any Desperate Housewives best moments video compilation, that'll probably be on all
that
of them.
That will probably be on them, yeah.
And they proceed to do it again.
Again and again and again. And this is fake, right? Like, I don't know a single guy that can just go again and again and again.
No, you need time to build up your stuff.
You need, like, surely he needs at least a Snickers and a Coke Zero before you compound it once more.
When you put water in the water filter, it doesn't come through that quickly. You need time for it to...
It needs to fill... I need at least a couple of days to get my engine, you know, tanks revved back up.
So the next day, Brie has the ladies over for lunch and is really feeling the effects of having a top who has no compassion for our bottoms insides.
No, I know, right?
And we have a clip.
What's that?
Crudité.
Are they supposed to be sliced and peeled?
I'm too tired. Please get that away from me.
I guess someone was with Keith last night.
Were you once, twice, three times not a lady?
It's not funny. 6 hours we had sex. I feel like the Holland Tunnel.
Honey, why don't you just tell him you need a little break?
Because he's young. If I turn down a roll in the hay, he's gonna think I'm an old woman.
You just said roll in the hay. I think that ship has sailed.
That's crap. 6 hours?
Yeah, like, just finish.
But it would get to that point where I'd literally just be like, Jesus Christ, if you're going to do this now, can you knock me out, please?
No wonder she feels like the Holland Tunnel.
What I feel like the Holland Tunnel.
What a good line. That was amazing. So she's so tired that she hasn't chopped up any of the vegetables for this
crudité
snack. Crudité. I'm going to assume it's like veg and dip or something.
Crudité is just like raw vegetables, I think, yeah.
She just brings in a whole bunch of
vegetables. She just brings in like a whole bunch of just uncut vegetables.
Hilarious. So, Bree then comes up with a solution and decides to make some overwhelming demands of Keith and his contract work in the hopes that this will make him too tired for sex, which I think is quite naive.
I also think it's quite rude because Bree also is Keith's boss.
Yes.
So you do have to give reasonable time frames, and giving him a page and a half's worth of work and then telling him you need it done by tonight isn't really a smart idea.
It's also a really dumb sitcom-y TV trope thing. Like, instead of just talking about the problem, I'll come up with a really dumb solution for humor. And it's naive, and it obviously doesn't work.
But in defense of Desperate Housewives, this sort of thing normally goes to Susan.
Yes.
So they're breaking the mold here a little bit by giving it to Bree. Susan's normally the one that does something so unbelievably dumb.
But Bree is a desperate housewife, and she doesn't want to lose Keith, so I can almost buy that she would rather do something stupid than just talk to him.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Keith comes upstairs to tell Bree that he's done for the day, and he seems entirely exhausted, which Bree is thankful for, and she invites him to stay the night, offering breakfast in the morning. They cuddle up together, and Bree is surprised that Keith is still horny, despite his exhaustion.
Some people find that hard work gets them even hornier. You know, all those gym bros that feel like they need to have a good hard pounding after the gym session.
It's the endorphins.
Yeah.
This is why I thought it was naive. You can't just make someone work harder or tire them out and they won't want to have sex.
Yeah.
If a man...
For a man, anyway.
Yeah. But this is the breaking point.
Although I will say for some men, because for me, if I'm tired, then I'm dead. Like, I don't have the energy for it.
Yeah, tops.
Yeah.
And this is the breaking point. She tells him that she's too old and she can't keep up with him. And Keith says that he can't keep up with Bree because she's so smart. And so he's been basically sexing her to keep her interested because he's worried about being intellectually not stimulated enough for her.
I'm in a relationship with a woman that wants to talk about the play's symbolism during halftime. Intermission.
God, he made me feel like such a Bree in that moment.
Bree has a lot of education to give Keith if he's sitting there calling a play's intermission halftime.
Halftime, that was hilarious. But I want to talk about symbolism and what things mean in films and stuff.
But he does it a lot, and I didn't used to care about that sort of stuff. I just watch a film, and to be fair, if I liked a film, I liked it. If I didn't like a film, I didn't like it. I didn't really question why until I got with B. And then B started talking to me about the symbolism of movies. And now I find myself thinking about the symbolism of the movies.
Yeah, once you start and you see it, you can't stop.
Partly because I know full well that B is just going to talk to me about it after the movie anyway. So I might as well start thinking about it now. So I've got an opinion.
But halftime?
Halftime.
Halftime, really? So she tells him that she is interested and enjoys his point of view and likes how he is. You know, she likes this. They're different, but she likes that.
It's a balance.
Exactly.
He balances her out.
And so they decide to go to sleep after finally talking.
She's like, put that away and let's go to sleep.
Yeah. So it's nice that they spoke about it, and they both had exactly the same worry, just about a different thing.
Kind of thing. Bree was worried that she was too old. Keith was worried that he was too dumb.
They were both worried that they couldn't keep up, but in a different way.
Yeah.
So I thought that was actually quite a nice ending, quite a nice turnaround.
I thought it was an interesting story.
Yeah.
For Bree, actually. I quite enjoyed this story arc of Bree's this episode.
Let's move on to Lynette's story. Lynette is doing some interviews and she's turned down a bunch due to inexperience or their salary needs. And this is for the nanny. They want a nanny. Tom then says that he's found one, much to Lynette's surprise, and she shows up at the house. Tom tries to tell Lynette not to judge too quickly, and Lynette is then annoyed to find that the nanny is Tom's mum.
So we mentioned this storyline a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
Because for some strange reason, I honestly thought it had been and gone. But it obviously hasn't. And we were incorrect. It's here right now.
We must have just gotten her confused with Karen at some points or something.
Maybe. Or I might have got... I don't know. I swear. But just an FYI, don't invite your parents over without asking your partner first.
Oh my God. And don't ever invite them over for a long-term period of time to help you out without... Oh my God, Lynette must be so angry.
It's just common courtesy. Like, especially if you've asked them to stay for an extended period of time. It's just common courtesy. This is Lynette's home as well. These are Lynette's children as well.
And this is someone that she knows.
Yeah.
And if she's annoyed, that must mean that she finds this woman annoying.
Oh, yeah.
So Tom is unbearable in this episode, and this is where it began right there, but it gets worse. The next morning, Tom's mum is making breakfast, and Tom is being an absolute child, demanding coffee, tapping his mug away, and wishing that she made French toast rather than scrambled eggs, because you've got someone making you eggs in the morning.
Yeah.
What the hell?
It gives off clicking at the restaurant. Like clicking at the waiter in the restaurant energy. It's vile and it's entitled and Tom needs to be hit by a bus.
And then she goes off to sort out the crying baby, leaving Lynette to bitch about her to Tom.
Yeah.
She tells him that she can't stand the person that Tom becomes when she's around because he becomes a complete child that she serves. She's some sort of
like
servant.
Like some Neanderthal. Yeah.
So Tom's mum has made Tom some dessert food for lunch rather than like a regular lunch.
I thought they were just for like his journey into the office.
Maybe. But either way, she's made him like
sweets. Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's making fun of him for it. But then she says that she has to admit that Tom's mum has been really excellent with the whole nannying. Her and the kids are all having dinner with Tom's mum serving everyone. When the kids start tapping their glasses and being all demanding, same as Tom was being earlier. And she then asks, as in Tom's mum, then asks Penny to help her with the boys' drinks. Ugh.
Mm.
Lynette tells Penny to sit down and that the boys can get their own drinks. And Tom's mum kind of berates her for her modern thinking. She claims that women like Lynette pop out babies and expect them to do everything themselves. Which, I mean, don't get me wrong, Lynette has a little bit of a history of that, but not to this degree.
Mm-mm.
And Lynette retaliates by sarcastically asking how it worked out for her, considering that Tom's dad had an affair and left.
Yeah, Tom's mum, Allison is the name of Tom's mum.
Calling her Tom's mum this whole time.
But Allison is there and she says something about how when she had the kids and Tom was like younger, she would always make sure that when her husband came home, there would be dinner on the table and he never wanted for anything more. And then Lynette was like, and how did that work out for you? He had an affair and left.
Which also probably explains why Tom is such an unbearable man-child when he gets home and things aren't ready for him. Like when he got home and Lynette made him a dinner, but the dinner was gone because
one of the kids ate it.
And he just acted like such a man-child. And maybe this is why.
I'm full of thoughts. So one, why did nobody call out Tom's mum making that snide comment to Lynette about returning to work? At the beginning of the scene, I'd like to point out, like, before anything started to really go wrong, Allison basically just said, I don't understand you women wanting to go back to work.
Because the boys are eating. They don't care.
Two, I'm out of milk. Maybe get a drink that actual adults drink then.
Who was that?
That was one of the twins when he was tapping his drink and then Lynette tells him off.
Yeah, milk is for children.
Yeah.
To help their bones grow stronger because of calcium. It's too acidic for adults.
If I were Lynette, I would not be standing for this utter laziness and sexism.
She doesn't.
Yeah, but she holds on for a long old time in this scene.
I do think it's kind of nice though, because she's trying to be respectful.
And the grandma roping Penny into this is shocking behaviour. And if I were Lynette, that would have been the final straw.
Yes, that was not it. We are not spreading that to Penny.
No.
Absolutely not. These boys can get their own drink.
And finally, Lynette was savage.
Yeah, she fucking went for it.
Like, absolute brutality there. And she might as well have drowned Allison in that pale, watery mash after dropping the hot tea on her.
Oh, it was a fatality. Mortal Kombat 1's got nothing on this.
Yeah.
So Allison does a sad walk-off and Lynette pretty much instantly realises that she went too far. What gave it away? The walk-off? The awkward silence?
The judgy looks at the children, despite the fact that Allison was rude to Lynette.
The next day, Tom comes home to Jenny, who is the new nanny, not having a clue what's happened to his mum, probably wondering if she's been cooked into a pie or something at this point.
Mrs. Lovett's meat pie.
They then have a sidebar after Tom fires Jenny, saying Lynette had no right to make his mum feel so uncomfortable in their home. Lynette defends herself, saying that she didn't want their kids to basically turn out sexist and lazy, which Tom is extremely offended by and takes personally, and I think we know why.
Yeah.
So he tells her that his mother is staying and he puts his foot down.
See, I'm with Lynette on this one. I wouldn't want Allison taking care of my children with the attitude that she has.
No, I am completely on Lynette's side. I think she did go too far, but I would personally think I would have pulled her to the side and said, I don't want you saying these things around my kids. I don't want my kids to turn out to be lazy and expect women to dote on them just because you have chosen to.
Yeah.
So I completely understand that.
Like, and Tom really did sidestep him being called out by Lynette for his sexism.
Yeah.
That was not covered at all. Lynette said, when we first met, you thought that women had two jobs, making a cake or jumping out of one. And Tom just did not acknowledge it whatsoever.
Yes. God, Tom is relentless.
Yeah.
Right.
This
now.
Season is terrible for the two of them because there is not one single episode where both of them come off fine. One of them is horrible in every episode.
Yeah, they're both awful. It's not normally Lynette, but Lynette's had some bad times.
She really has had some bad times. Like, and also this poor new nanny that's been given a job. First day,
poor Jenny.
She meets Tom, right? Poor Jenny. She's like, hi, I'm Jenny. I'm the new nanny. And Tom looks at her and just thinks, not for long.
Yeah, sorry. You're not a good fit here. The next day, Lynette makes a peace offering and pours Tom's mum some coffee, apologising for what she said. The mum, let's just call her Allison.
Yeah.
Allison then says that it was nice to feel useful again and tells her that the kitchen is her favourite room in the house for all of that it represents to her. Not really understanding why Lynette would give it up and go out to work. Lynette tells her that it's just who she is, and then she leaves to feed the baby, leaving Allison and Penny alone together. Allison then has a moment and asks Penny what her name is and if she lives here, seemingly quite confused.
Yeah, poor Penny, like, who probably doesn't really get what's happening here right now, but the signs have been woven throughout the entire episode.
And when you get to this ending where they're giving away she's definitely going through some dementia,
yeah,
you start to think about all those clues and those hints.
Yeah, because at first you just think, oh, you know, it's
a batty old lady.
It's just a little bit of a batty old lady. Yeah. She's, you know, a little bit forgetful, or, you know, and we all do it. We all call people by the wrong name. I mean, Bee's mum calls Bee Kyle all the time.
Yes, and
and then she'll call him Harley.
And I don't think anyone calls you Joel.
No, I know.
Also, my theory is that she doesn't actually have any early signs of dementia. She has just been a batty woman throughout this episode, and Penny has a very forgettable face.
To be fair, we didn't even notice she'd been replaced.
Right? Sorry, do you live here?
Like, yeah, maybe she just had this sudden realization that the actor had changed. She's like, who are you?
Now let's talk about Susan. Susan has decided to do some more raunchy content on Va 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 Broom, and this involves doing live video chats as a woman named Tanya. She's given herself a pseudonym.
I'm Tanya.
With some very horny men.
Yeah.
Susan is hesitant to take her top off at first with one of the men, wanting to go slow, and she ends up closing the laptop.
Yeah, like, nobody... She tries to have a nice chat. She's like, oh, well, slow down, we've still got 59 minutes. Nobody does this for a chat and a cuppa. Like, strip or stop wasting this man's time.
Yeah, but if he's paid for an hour and she takes her top off that quickly, where'd you go from
Where'd you go from there? Plus, Susan's like, oh, is that some dirt? Do you want me to hoover it? I'm like, is he paid for an hour just to watch a woman clean solo?
Right. So this pisses off Maxine, who is mad that they may have just lost a major client, and says that she can't keep giving her chances, implying that this has probably happened a few times, and then she fires Susan.
Yeah, she does, and that firing was cold.
That's because Maxine is horrible, and she is using Susan for all she's worth.
Yeah.
The next day, Lee asks Mike if he's willing to sell his house, as Paul Young has asked and is willing to pay way above asking price for it, but he very heatedly says no. Kind of also threatening to punch the guy, which was quite on call.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Lee. Everybody knows we are not a fan of Lee. Mm-hmm. But I think this wasn't very nice of Mike to do. Lee's got a job to do. It's not Lee's position to turn to Paul and say, no, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, you have your own personal biases and stuff, but the guy's trying to do his job and he has to ask.
Yeah, he has to ask. If Paul wants him to ask, he has to ask.
This is all happening at the bank, and Mike then finds out that they're $9,000 short.
Yeah, this will be because of the money.
This will be because of Postergate.
Yeah.
At Susan's, Lynette then brings Susan back a piece of borrowed jewelry, which Susan is going to be selling, and then she overhears Mike come in to ask about the money. So Lynette pretends that she borrowed the money to help her out, and Mike leaves. Susan then admits to Lynette that she has done some softcore porn online, and Lynette, let's just say, has a bad reaction, basically judging her for everything that she's decided to do up to this point.
I love how Susan, when Mike comes in and says, I've been to the bank, I love how Susan says, you went to the bank? As if it, like, it upset her that he went without her.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a, oh my God, like, you went to the bank. It just, she made it sound like she was sad that he went without her, or that it was really dangerous and he really risked his life.
It's dangerous for her.
She's like, you went to the bank?
I'm going to assume that she didn't think he would need to go to the bank for at least a couple of days and she'd have time to come up with some sort of story. Mm. So Susan then highlights the situation that her, Mike, and MJ are in, which makes Lynette feel bad for her judging, and Lynette goes back into friend mode and comforts Susan.
Honestly, this would hit much harder if Susan, Mike, and MJ were actually living in squalor or something, but their flat's nice. They both have jobs that keep food on the table. Only one job as well, I'd like to point out. So it's not like they're those people that are having to work twice as hard, working two jobs, earning half as much, and living in a much worse situation than what Susan is. It's like they've deliberately tried to make Susan the poster child for, you know, the Desperate Housewives poverty poster child or something.
Well, it is interesting because for most working class people, this is their reality. They're living in, they're renting out flats or not the best houses that they can possibly have, and they're just putting food on the table and getting by month.
Mm.
That's most people's reality. That's the high percentage. What she had before with her middle upper class house ownership and her life, that was what most people strive for.
Yeah, that in itself is a form of privilege.
It's a massive form of privilege,
really. Like, obviously you're not in the 1%, no one's claiming that you're in the 1%, but you were much better off than many of the people around you in the world, in your country, and now all of a sudden you are finding yourself in the same position as I'd probably say 90% of the people in your country, and you're there acting like you're living in a rat infested shithole with, I don't know, a leaky roof and you can't afford food.
Yes, most people dream of getting rich, but I think most people really do just want to live a very normal life and be able to afford their own place and live the life that Susan and Mike had.
People just want to live comfortably. They don't want to have to live paycheck to paycheck. They don't want to have to be, you know, worried month on month.
So we're not judging, but I mean, Susan's in a shitty situation and she's really trying to get out of debt. But it's just every once in a while, it seems like she's coming up with some real first world problem stuff.
It's just, yeah, just this moment with Lynette where she's like, look where I am. Look what I'm trying to pull myself out from. I'm like, girl, you're giving very Kim Kardashian. I lost my diamond earring in the ocean. Like, girl.
So Susan is at work, and by at work, I mean at school. And Maxine calls to ask her if she'd consider working for her again. Apparently there is a client who is willing to pay some big money to see Susan. She seems hesitant at first, but then asks how much money is being offered.
Like, seriously, how much? And he has to pay before the session, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Mm.
Susan is now in her lingerie and turns on her laptop to meet the new client. He seems unwilling to come on camera for a second, but he does after a hot minute. And it's Paul Young.
Yeah. I love how Susan's pacing as well. She paces before she lifts up the laptop and logs in. She's got a glass of wine in her hand. She's like pacing and drinking to like build herself up to it.
Yeah, this is much further than just the lingerie vacuum cleaning and stuff, isn't it?
Mm.
So I don't blame her. And yeah, so Susan's very shocked. He tells her that he wants her house and is willing to pay a good price, but she says it isn't for sale. And we have a clip.
What do you want?
I'd like your house, and I'm willing to pay a very fair price for it.
Yeah, Mike told me about that. It's not for sale.
Susan, it seems to me a lot of things are for sale. Your body, your honor, your reputation. The house would seem to be the smallest of those things.
Are you threatening me?
I'm simply saying it would be terribly unfortunate if anyone were to find out what I already know. I mean, I was shocked. I can only imagine what your husband and son would think.
I mean, he read her to filth.
He really did. Is Maxine not watching this? Because I love that Maxine seems to watch every single performance of Susan's, bar this one.
Right, she watched the last one to see how she would get on doing the job, since that she seemed to have struggled with this new raunchy stuff.
Mm.
And then she rehires her for another client who desperately wants to see Susan and pay big money, and she doesn't watch to check that Susan does okay this time.
Right.
Crazy.
Absolutely mental. Because this is blackmail, obviously, and so if Maxine is watching this, maybe she could help.
Yeah, but she won't, because that would help out Susan.
Mm.
He then says that he'll give her a couple days to think about it, and he ends the call.
Yeah.
Thus ending the episode.
Does Beth not know that there is Susan's giant face somewhere in her house?
I don't
know. She's going to, like, open a cupboard one day and it's just there, like in the linen cupboard. She's just going to open it up.
I guess he's probably rolled it up like a poster and just hidden it somewhere.
Maybe, yeah.
But, oh God, who knows? Who knows what the guy's planning? But other than us.
Well, yeah.
We know.
We know. And the others that have watched this show already also know, so.
The episode ends as Mary Alice says that Paul Young knew what he was doing was wrong, but that he wanted to punish those who he thought had wronged him. So he has a plan that he knew would turn everyone against each other, and he was going to make sure he succeeded.
Yes.
Devious.
It is very devious.
So that was the end of the episode. We're now going to move on to Joel's picks for gayest and straightest moment. What do you have for gayest moment?
So my award for gayest moment, I give it to that neighbour. Is it Emma? What's her name, Emma?
I think so.
The neighbour. I'm going to give it to Emma for just suddenly breaking out of her dull, monotonous life, or what she felt was dull and monotonous. I'm not saying that being a stay-at-home mum is dull and monotonous, and deciding she wants to do a cabaret show, like a jazz cabaret show, and then she just goes and absolutely wows everybody with her amazing singing.
Yeah, it was really cool. She got so bored one day that she was like, I'm going for my dreams now, I'm sick of it.
And absolutely loved that in the actual extended scene with that we see, like in the actual story of Gabby and Renee, you can see the husband and the daughter in the audience, and the daughter looks so, like, taken with her mum. Like, yeah. So inspired and impressed by her mother's sort of character, and yeah, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, it's such a shame we don't have more of it, really. That could have been a really interesting character.
Yeah, it really could have been.
And then what do you have for straightest moment?
So my award for straightest moment it obviously goes to that man at the beginning, right?
What man at the beginning?
That creepy perv. Not kink shaming, I'm just using Susan's words.
Oh, the one that asked if she was lactating.
Yeah. The one that just wanted to get straight to the boobs.
Yeah, take
straight
off your top.
Straight to the boobs. Like, straight men. Honestly, you go right to the boobs.
Yeah. Well, bravo, bravo, fucking bravo.
Yeah. Like, watch Friends, guys. Women have 7 erogenous zones. So those are my awards. And now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
My award for
best parent of the episode,
I gave this to Lynette for trying to stop the boys from relying on women to serve them at all times.
Yes.
I honestly didn't see myself giving Lynette Best Parent Awards anytime soon.
No, but, you know, you got to find it where you can find it right now.
Yeah. So,
best parent is few and far between in this show at the moment.
Yeah, good job, Lynette.
Well done.
In all fairness, that was a good one.
Okay, and who do you have for the worst parent?
My award for
worst parent of the episode,
Tom.
Oh, okay.
For allowing his kids to think that it's a woman's job to serve them.
Yeah.
I mean, with the way that they were acting when his mum was around and she was serving them, I'd say that is a mighty big failing of parenthood right there.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Unacceptable okay. behaviour.
Yeah, unacceptable. So, the Scarvos really take home the awards this episode.
Yeah, normally the worst, but
yeah, they kind of cancel each other out this episode.
Fucking Scarvos. So, that was Season 7, Episode 5, Let Me Entertain You. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments, and theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at BoyfriendsReview.
You can also email us at boyfriendsreview@outlook.com, and you can find Louis, who does the artwork, at DocRendMonkDesign on Instagram, and there's a link to his Etsy page where he does commissions.
Yeah.
Join us next week when we'll be back in your ear holes with Season 7, Episode 6, Excited and Scared.
See you then, guys.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.